Alright, welcome to episode 6 of Hits and Gigs. My name's Noah Sherman. Joining me as always, Dan Rougeau.
Hey everybody.
And Savick. Penelic.
Hey man.
How you doing, Savick?
Good dude, it's nice to be here.
Bit of a rough morning for you, eh?
Bit of a rough morning, yeah. Had a birthday celebration last night for a friend of mine. He decided that he wanted to do pint for pint with me.
That can be disastrous.
Yeah, the bar closed and we never really got to finish. But I finished one ahead of everyone else, so that's...
Well, what did you finish with, man? What was the tally?
The tally was only 9.
Oh, that's a lot.
Well, that's a lot of pints.
Dude, that's like $70 worth of alcohol.
It was $45 because I drank cheap beer.
Nice, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
Labatt Blue all fucking night, dude.
Labatt Blue, cool.
If you're 50. Gonna do pint for pint, you probably want to.
Yeah.
I don't like 50.
50 sucks because of, yeah. It sucks.
It's from what I've heard. It's 50 years old.
You know what bugs
me? It's Labatt Blue from 50 years ago.
You know what bugs the shit out of me?
What's that?
Is that the Blue Jays have a deal with Budweiser in their stadium. So they don't sell Canadian. They sell, like, Budweiser and, like, Bud Light. And it's, like, the only fucking Canadian ball team. They don't have Canadian beer.
That Bud Light lime beer sucks so
bad.
Yeah. It's fucking terrible.
I've actually never had it because I just don't really
Bud Light
agree.
And Budweiser are all fucking terrible. Coors is terrible. Beer is terrible except the beer I like.
Yeah. Duh.
Which is Blue, apparently.
And the only beer I like is Blue and European beers.
What about Pale, man?
Pale is sick.
Alright.
All you all you fucking people from out west know about the fucking Pale Cube.
We actually watched both FUBARs 2 days ago.
Nice. So good.
Okay, so on the docket today. On the docket. Savick's. No, he's not giving the face today. Okay. Not giving the eye. Oh, there it is. There it is.
Complacent. I don't give a fuck. Yeah, say what you want. Look.
Anyway, we're actually really excited about the show today because we got two really cool people coming on the show.
Yeah.
Same as always, really. We got John Maharaj, who is a bass player from Toronto. He was just at the Junos, so I'm really curious about, like, he was at the Junos as an artist. I was talking to Savick about setting up this interview, and I mentioned to Savick that, like, John was at the Junos, and Savick was like, well, fuck. That's swell.
Well, what the fuck are we going to talk to him about? Like, I thought he just fucking went. Like, just went to, like, see them. And I was like, well, fuck, that'll give us, like, a lot to talk about. And I was like, that gives us nothing to talk about. And then, like, the next day we, like, talked about this. And apparently he went with a band to the Junos.
Yeah, he was nominated for...
He was nominated for an award. I thought he just fucking just went for fun. So no one and I are getting into a big fucking argument over Facebook. Just like, well, what the fuck are we going to do? We have to do something.
Yeah, you're like, hey, John, so I hear you went to the Junos. Yep. How was it? Great. Cool. Well, thanks, John, for joining us. So John Maharaj is going to be here. And then Rob Grieve, who plays in a band called Blastronaut, and they just released, it was like part one of two of their EP, I guess? Because it's two separate EPs, right?
It is two separate EPs, yeah.
Nice. All right, so we're going to talk to him about the music, which is really sick, and you heard it as an intro to the show as well, and you'll be hearing it a lot more. But yeah, I feel like you guys want to let's just jump straight to the interview.
Just hop right in.
Yep. All right, so
hippity-hoppity-hoo.
Coming up, we got John Maharaj.
Hippity-hoppity-hey.
Thank you.
Okay, so welcome back to episode 6 of Hits and Gigs. Now we are very pleased to be joined by John Maharaj. How you doing, John?
I'm well, and you?
I'm doing great. We actually just heard one of your tunes coming into this segment called God Exists and He's American, and that's from...
what is that from? Okay, that's from a record I recorded about 5 years ago when I first moved back from the States, and it's Matt Stevens on guitar and Eric Dube on drums. And yeah, it's never been mixed or mastered or released, and I don't know if it ever will, so there you go.
Oh, pretty exclusive listen.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I guess we can just start off by asking you, you graduated from U of T, I guess a few years back, a couple years ago.
Let's say 10.
10, okay, we'll go with 10. We're just kind of curious about the transition for you from graduating school into being a full-on musician.
Okay. Should I just sort of, like, tell the story as it happened to me?
Yeah
please.
Stories.
That'd be
wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. I finished in 03. I was really lucky because I played bass, and, you know, everybody always needs a bass player, and so I sort of quit my last... quote-unquote job, I guess, in the summer of first year, or maybe the spring of first year. I was fortunate enough, I'm from Mississauga, so I got to, my mom let me stay at home rent-free while I was going to U of T, but I just had to deal with the commute and everything. So all the money I made from, you know, gigging, which wasn't much in those days, just went straight back into tuition.
Right.
And, you know, as I was going through school, I started playing more with different people, with, you know, some of the instructors there, like, who's there? Roy Patterson was teaching there when I was there. Who else? I'm trying to think of who I was playing with at that time. You know, teachers would recommend me for things, like Dave Young. Actually, Dave Young recommended me for some sort of small town theater work in my first year, which is sort of what set the ball rolling on a bunch of different things. It feels hilarious calling it this, but my quote-unquote professional career has been pretty sporadic and diverse. It's been a lot of different things and sort of existing in a bunch of different communities musically, which is cool.
Yeah.
So what happened, first year I started doing some theater, like summer stock theater, you know, like small town, that sort of stuff, which was great because I met a lot of people and learned how to read music, because I couldn't really read music when I started U of T. And
I still can't read music, so I mean, that's, yeah.
Yeah, it's a drag, right? It doesn't make any sense. Like rat turds on a page. It's a so that was happening. And then, you know, I was doing a lot more jazz stuff. And then, you know, it was kind of just like all these different seeds were getting planted in sort of different scenes, I guess. And it started getting busier as school started finishing up. And then the transition for me was actually pretty seamless in terms of finishing school. And then, you know, once I finished school, I kind of had a couple months at home. And then my mom wanted to leave Mississauga, and so I kind of had to get out of the house, and I did. And then since then, aside from that time spent in New York, I've just been living in Toronto doing music full-time. The Humber thing was complete fluke, kind of like everything else I've done. And that happened because when I was in my fourth year at U of T, they sent a band to, I don't know if you guys would remember IAJE, if that was around when you guys were in school or anything. You know what that is?
Nope.
No.
IAGE. Holy shit. Okay, so that's it was an organization that was called the International Association of Jazz Educators.
Okay.
And they would have these conferences and, like, full on. Like, they did one in Toronto, I guess, about 11 years ago. They don't exist anymore. And so they did one in Long Beach, California, and U of T sent a band to go and play, and I was fortunate enough to be in that band. And so on the plane home, well, at the conference on the plane home, I met Kathy Mitro.
Oh, okay.
Who, you know, heads up community music. And I believe I sat beside her on one of the flights home. It was two flights home, and So I sat beside her and we got to chatting and didn't, I didn't really think anything of it. I thought she was cool, but I didn't think anything would come of the conversation. And then I guess a couple months later, Mike McLennan needed a sub, you know, Mike McLennan, the bass player.
Yeah, he teaches at Humber as well. So
he does teach at Humber as well. And he needed a sub. And so I came in for a week. And then I got a call that week from Kathy saying, do you want to just come back? Because we've got a bit of an overflow of students. And so I've been there ever since. And then that led to, I guess, 5 or 6 years later, I started teaching in the intro program at Humber College. And then that led to, now I'm actually involved in all three. Intro, the degree program, and still involved in community music. So it's cool. It's a lot, but it's fun. I like it. It's, you know, the it's great. I mean, that's where I met you, right? Like you were like 14 or 13, maybe younger.
Yeah, I was also an asshole.
No, you weren't. No, you weren't. Oh, no, you have no idea.
Okay.
No. I would hold that description for a select few, and you are not even close to being one of them.
I'm so jealous of all the kids that got to do community music.
Yeah. Right?
Like there was,
I know, it's unbelievable.
Like, I'm from Edmonton, and there was nothing like that back home.
There wasn't much.
And I feel left out.
I know.
Seeing these kids that are 16 and they're playing way better than I am.
Oh, never mind, man. 16, it's like, well, I don't know if you know how it works, but like they start them at 3, right? It's like the Jedi.
It's like the Tiger Woods treatment, man.
No, seriously, right? Like when did you start, Noah? How old were you?
It was I think it was when I started high school, so like 14.
Oh, so I had you when you were in your first year there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I mean, you know, they start them at 3, they get them singing and dancing and that sort of thing, and they choose an instrument later. Or they choose several instruments, and it's not, you know, and so all they know, and I guess the method that they start early, I think it's ORF, I believe it's called, which I think is a more sort of ear-based method of teaching. And so by the time these kids, if they've been there from the beginning, you know, they wind up with these abilities that are just, it's shocking. They completely take them for granted because they've learned it like a language. It's really incredible.
Yeah, it's like super soldier musicians.
Kind of.
Is this so? This. It's ORF, right? You said this.
What I think that's what it, you know. I don't deal with. I mean, I even know like you know, students your age. I'm less involved at the community school with the younger students these days. I'm sort of involved with, I guess, those in like early mid high school to late high school in terms of community music.
Right.
I mean, I've got a couple younger students now, but I haven't really been teaching children, per se, for a while.
Right. Okay, that's... Wow. Just the whole, like... I didn't even know the kids started that young. And this is this is all through Humber at the community music program that you're talking about, or...?
Yeah, this is all community music, man. This is, like children, like, very young children, and they'll have them on these percussion instruments, like these... They're not xylophones, but they're mallet-type instruments.
Right.
And, you know, they'll get them singing and dancing and just getting used to the idea of music, you know, just as something like sort of physical and visceral. And then, you know, as they get older, they can figure out what they want to do, if they want to stick with it. And, you know, lots of people go through community music and they don't stick with music, but they have this training and, you know, music education is, I think it's an important thing. I think it's important for people to just know what it is. I think.
Right.
I think, though, just doing any sort of art training just opens up areas of your mind that you just wouldn't use otherwise and just makes other things way easier.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it just makes you a more well-rounded person. I mean, but again, preaching to the choir right now, right?
We're all pretty well-rounded, you know.
Yeah, completely.
So, John, you mentioned going down to New York and living in the States. Would you mind just talking a bit about that whole experience?
Sure. Okay. So, so that happened, I think I left in 2006. Okay. Well, this is sort of important background. Two of my best friends are, Jamie Reynolds, who's a piano player who lives in New York now. Mm-hmm. And, he's actually having a good business with the singer, Melissa Stiliano. They're married and they're both from Toronto and they live in New York now. And Matt Stevens, the guitar player, who, he plays, I don't know if Christian Scott, and there's this band, The Next Collective, and he plays with Walter Smith, and he's playing in Terry Lynn Carrington's band now, I think.
Yeah, he's a pretty unbelievable player.
Yeah, so you know Matt. Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah. So, anyway, those guys are two of my best friends, and you know, Matt, after he finished Berkeley, he moved back to Toronto for a bit, and Jamie was in Toronto after he finished U of T, and then they, at the same time, applied for grants to move down to New York, and they got them, and they did. And then so after they left, they were pressuring me a lot to just do it, and I kind of didn't want to, because I had a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff going on in Toronto. And then finally I applied the first time and I didn't get it, and then I applied the second time to go down, live there for 8 months, take lessons and practice and basically not gig, because I was playing a ton, but I wasn't necessarily at that point doing a ton of stuff I felt really good about musically. I was kind of like a gig pig, I guess. Like, you know what I mean? I was just doing everything. Not that that's a bad thing, and everybody goes through a period of having to do that. And truth be told, things are slow right now, so I kind of like, man, gig pig was where it was at. But yeah, and so you know what I mean? So I just, anyway, the second time I applied, I got it. And I moved down in, I think it was November of 06, and the main part was I was going to study with the great bass player Drew Gress, which I did, and then I had some one-off lessons as well with some other guys, and hung out in the city, went to hear a ton of music, played, and started gigging a little bit, actually. My roommate was a bass player, and she subbed out a couple gigs to me, and then I just wound up sort of doing those gigs. And yeah, and then that happened, but, you know, about, I guess, halfway or two-thirds in, I just realized I didn't want to live there.
Okay.
As much as it was an amazing place, it's you know, I was 27 or something, or 26, and if I had moved there when I was younger, when I was like 20, I might have been able to deal with it. But I, you know, I had a sort of serious girlfriend at home in Toronto who is now my wife.
Congratulations. And, pretty serious. Yeah. Pretty serious.
Pretty serious. Yeah. And you know, I just it wasn't for me. It wasn't for me. The hustle aspect, I'm not very good at, you know, and so I knew that it wasn't the sort of environment. I was just also in a really weird headspace when I was there, and I knew that I wasn't going to be able to, not necessarily completely for musical reasons. Like, I felt like I had it in me musically that I could, if I kept working at it, you know, I could be good. It was a bunch of things. It was just living in the U.S. I didn't want to do. It was being away from Kathleen. It was a bunch of things. And so I moved back to Canada later on, and been here ever since.
But so would doing the, like, applying for the grants and going down to study, would that be, if you had the chance to do it again, would you
at my current age,
I guess, if you did it again, same age.
Yes, absolutely. It was the best thing I've ever done.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, without question. I mean, you know, it just sort of, I mean, I lived on a street in Brooklyn called Ocean Avenue, and on my street, between Parkside and Prospect Park subway stops, which were two stops right next to each other, there were five bass players at least who were better than me.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
You know what I mean? That just really puts stuff in perspective.
Right.
At least five. There are five bass players who I knew of who were better than me.
Wow.
Who lived on that one block. You know what I mean? So that kind of, that sort of, I knew if I wasn't getting shit done on whatever day, there were at least five people who were. I mean, you know, New York is a lot of things, and I don't want to live there now just because I can't deal with the hustle and the standard of living for me right now, and it's just not what I want to do. But I think it's, you know, especially if you want to play jazz, I think, I don't think everybody has to live there forever. But I think it's a really eye-opening thing that is totally worth doing, especially since we live in Canada, and there is a grant that exists where you can do it. Like, I mean, it's sort of our birthright, being Canadian, that this money exists that you can do that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you pay for it, so you may as well cash in on it.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Hey, John, I don't mean to be a bore, but I think it's probably an important question considering our you know, who our listeners are. Would you mind just talking a little bit about the actual application process for that grant?
And what okay, like? Sure. It's been a while since I applied, and things might have changed. Things probably have changed. And I don't know if the grant as it was named when I got it still exists. It might be called something else. But when I applied for it, it was called the, I think, Professional Development Non-Classical Musician Grant. And you could get up to, this is from the Canada Council for the Arts.
Right.
The Ontario Council has separate grants. Toronto Arts Council is a separate thing. And I think you could get up to $20,000, but you had to budget for it. You had to have a game plan. And so what you have to do is you have
10K,
to...
blow 10K.
Yeah, you can't just say like, hey, bro, spot me 15 Gs. I'm going to go to New York and hang. Like, it's, well, you probably could do that. And if I don't know. I don't think you'd be successful, though. And so what you do is you have to sort of write... You have to write a resume or a CV. And you have to get... I don't remember if... I needed letters of reference. I don't remember.
Okay.
But you had to have a sort of a plan, a project description, where you talk about what exactly it is you plan on doing and with whom, and why should the Canada Council award you all this money.
Yeah.
And then under that umbrella, you have to write a coherent budget explaining why you need X amount of dollars and where exactly that money's going. And I was super lucky. Like, I just... So when I got mine, and this is neither here nor there, but I got an amount that I asked for. But what happened was I had budgeted for X amount, and then the Canadian dollar went through the roof.
Oh.
It was, I don't know if you guys remember, in 06 or 07, it actually went above parity.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so my budget numbers got totally skewed, and so what I was given actually went a lot further.
Nice.
So it was good. I mean... I got to do everything I set out to do. Got to hear a ton of great music. You know, got to live in a decent apartment. You know, nothing special, but it was on a subway line and it was comfortable. And, you know, I could play there most of the time.
That's very important.
And so that's what it was. And that's the process. And so you submit this grant application to the council. The deadlines are like November and March. And then you wait and you see if you got your money. And if you got your money, you literally get a check in the mail.
Wow.
For thousands of dollars. And you do, and then at the end, you have to write a summary, you know, just saying, yeah, I actually did this, and talk about how it enriched your artistic vision or whatever, however you so choose to describe what it is you're doing. And that's that. And it's funding that exists, and it's unclear as to how long that money will exist, because you know, if there's anywhere where, you know, governments love cutting money, it's from the arts, because sometimes it's hard to see the fruits of our labor. But it's something that I think it's a valuable thing. And since then, I haven't applied for or been a direct recipient of any grants since then. I mean, I've been on albums that were funded by grants and tours that were partially funded by grants. But I myself, after that, I kind of figured I'd quit while I was ahead. And I just got busy working. So I didn't really... I mean, that's that music that you played beforehand, that's part of the reason that album hasn't been released. I just kind of... It sounds like a cop-out, but I just got really busy with playing and with sort of life. And it sort of sat on a shelf. I mean, I might put it out in a couple of years, but I, you know, when I listen to it, it's like, I don't play that way anymore. And
yeah, that's a big part of it. Like, every musician changes so much in like 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like,
5 months, let alone five years.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are parts of it I like, and there's parts of it I don't like. And I mean, the track I played for you, I mean, there's things I like about it, and there's things that, you know, so I mean, maybe it will get released, maybe when I'm older and possibly less insecure, I'll be confident to put that out. But I mean, I don't know. I might not. It might just exist for me. I don't know. I'm kind of waiting for Matt Stevens to get a little bit more famous, and then I'll release it, and I can be like, hey, guys, check this out.
Nice.
You know, but, you know, we'll see what happens. I don't know.
Maybe you can put it out as a best of.
A best of, I don't even know what. Best of Matt Stevens. P.S. I knew him when. Yeah.
All right, so let's move on. I guess in the last couple days, you did something really exciting. You were at the Junos. You were nominated. Congrats, by the way. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Thanks.
You're there with Allison Au, And you were nominated for, you mentioned this before, just off air, it's Contemporary Jazz Album of the Year.
Contemporary Jazz Album of the Year, yes.
Nice. Do you want to talk about, I'm really curious about just the experience from an artist perspective at the Junos. Like, I mean, how did they treat you? Like, I saw you tweeted out a picture of the red carpet, which was, like, hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know. It was just, like, a red carpet and, like a couple security people just hanging out.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it was, you know, it was actually quite quite cold in Regina.
I guess how did you find out about the nomination? Like,
okay, I found out about it because Allison sent me a text.
Oh, okay, there you go.
I think, or no, maybe I found out about it on the website. I don't remember. It's kind of a blur. Anyway, so Allison got nominated. I don't remember exactly who found out and how, but we all got word of it, and we were all happy because. And actually, our good friend Alex Goodman got nominated in the same category. I don't know if you know Alex. He's a phenomenal guitar player, composer.
Yeah.
And he's I think he's going to Manhattan School now. He's living in New York, and he got nominated. And anyway, it was cool this year because there were a bunch of sort of younger folks getting nominated in those categories, which was nice to see. It's nice to see some sort of new blood, and especially Allison, you know, because. I think she plays great and she writes really great music, and it's hard, but it's still very human.
Nice.
And
that's a tough balance.
Do you know what I mean by that? Like, it doesn't sound like
it's not like hard for the sake of being hard, right?
Yeah, it doesn't sound hard,
right?
Okay. Which is and I like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. As I get older and crustier, which is hard to believe it's possible, but I'm sort of. You know, getting more interested or just I'm more sort of confident in my tastes. I like things that sound like music, and I don't want to know, you know, music is hard unless I see the chart, you know, like,
right.
But and I think her music is great that way because it's very involved, but it's also the end result is just this really good sounding music. So anyway, yeah, blah blah blah, Allison's great and I love her. Moving on. So we get nominated. And then she found out that there's actually funding that exists if you're not on a label, which her record is not, that you can bring the band out. And so because she is so on the ball, she applied for it right away and got it. And so she got to bring all four of us out there to Regina. And so I went out a day after the other guys because at Humber I had to finish up my testing in my intro improv class.
Right.
And, so I flew out on Friday. Met up with those guys. We went to our ceremony on the Saturday, and it was very cool. Like, you know, it was a nice banquet dinner. Gian Gomeshi was hosting, and I've played an event, the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame. I was in the house band of that, and he was the host, or the MC or whatever, and he was really funny, and so I sort of knew what I was in for, and, you know, he didn't disappoint. He was really hilarious as a host, and it was good, you know. It was sort of a celebration of Canadian music on the Saturday, and there was this rock band that played that I hadn't heard of before called Monster Truck. Have you guys heard of this band?
Nope.
No, I haven't heard of them.
They're amazing, like, oh my god, kind of like a cross between Soundgarden and the 70s, but yeah, wow. Check out Monster Truck.
Okay.
And yeah, we hung out. We got to, you know, there was a green carpet on the Saturday. We got to hang out with Fred Penner a little bit.
That's awesome. That's fucking awesome.
It's pretty weird, right? Like, Fred, the guy from Dragon's Den, which one? Brett from Dragon's Den was there.
Wait,
is he the one with the hair?
Is he the bitter one?
No, that's Kevin O'Leary.
Okay. Everyone knows right away who the bitter one is.
That's the one with the curly hair, who's always got, like, sort of gray jackets.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, there were just sort of a bunch of, you know, Canadians of note. I mean, Tom Cochran got an award for Humanitarian, because he does a lot of stuff with World Vision. And so it was really cool, actually, just being there, and Tom Cochran gave a really great speech.
That's great.
And yeah, we were treated really well. And then the next night was like the big one that you saw on TV if you watched it, hosted by Bublé. And I mean, that one was cool, but I kind of like the one we went to more. It was just a little, I thought, classier. The one that was on TV was kind of really flashy and really, I mean, there were some great musical performances and all that, but
it's for the kids. It's one of those.
It's for the kids. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. So you mentioned that you were at the Junos, you were like seated at a table with a bunch of like people that you knew, right? Like,
yeah. Well, we weren't at Alex's table. Alex was at the table right beside us, but you know, and Sharantha was at our table, and we were all there, and yeah, so it was cool. And who else was there? I used to play, and I didn't realize they were there. They used to be called the Canadian Tenors. Now they're called the Tenors.
Okay.
They were there, and I didn't know, and so I saw the drummer setting up, Mark Ineo, who's a great drummer, and I was like texting him as they were setting up, and so he and the musical director Darren D'Souza came over, and we were chatting because I hadn't seen those guys in Toronto in a while, so that was cool. I mean, it's funny who you run into out there, and we heard a great band that won Instrumentalist of the Year, Pugs and Crows, I think they're from Vancouver.
Very nice.
Yeah, so you know, it was cool.
And it's just every time I hear of this like amazing new artist that I've never heard of, it just amazes me how many fantastic artists there are out there, you know?
It's you know, it's crazy and it's really intimidating, and it makes you realize that, I mean, I'm just like, especially right now, like I'm like, you know, what the fuck? There's so many people, and then you think you know who they are, and then there's more.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, and it's funny, just I guess because in Canada, because all major cities are so far apart, we're not as exposed to what's going on. But there's, I mean, you know, there's a lot of shit going on here. You know, and, I mean, that's part of the reason I moved back. So
yeah,
right. Well, John, I think we're all out of questions. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. I love the podcast, so I'm nice, I'm really happy to be here.
It's a pleasure.
Do you have some stuff that you're working on right now that you want to promote or anything before we cut it?
You know, I'm just kind of relearning how to play the bass right now, to be honest. I mean, I just played on a couple months ago, Harley Card, a great guitarist.
Yeah.
Played on his next record, and that should be out hopefully in a couple months, and he's really written a great record. I mean, Harley, he really writes his ass off, and this next record has got, I think, some of his best stuff, possibly his overall, like, there's a couple, it's just really good, I think, and I'm not just saying, I'm on half of it, and Fortan's on the other half.
Nice.
He's got, like, two bands that are on it, and there's some solo acoustic guitar stuff that's really great, too. So that's cool, and I just got off the road with Morgan Childs, you know, the great drummer.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
His band with Kelly Jefferson and Restivo, and that was, you know, that was awesome. That was a really great experience. But as I said, you know, things are kind of slow right now, so I'm just kind of trying to relearn how to play the bass and keep a bit of a low profile and just get my shit together, as it were.
I'm right with you, man. I'm right with you.
You know what I mean? I'm just kind of in practice mode right now.
Cool. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate
All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah. Thanks so much, Ron.
right, so welcome back to episode 6 of the Hits and Gigs podcast. The tune you just listened to was No One Has Ever Seen the Utah Raptor in Its Natural Environment and Live to Tell About It by Blastronaut. So, from the band Blastronaut, we have Rob Grieve here today. Thanks for joining us on the show, Rob.
Yep, thanks for having me out here.
Rob's a good old friend of mine. We hang out a lot.
Yep.
It's dope. So, Rob, I guess we'll just get started. Why don't you just tell us all a bit about yourselves and...
Well, I'm from Edmonton, like you, out west, and I moved here a couple years ago to go to U of T, do my bachelor's, and now I'm done that. I just released this record with Blastronaut, and sort of that's all I do.
Right on.
Well, I'm curious, like, how did the band come together? Was it through school, or was it just you get just kind of met?
Yeah, well, we all met each other at school. Yeah. Yeah, Matt and Ian both went to U of T also. Ian actually went to McEwen in Edmonton with me as well. Nice. And
it's a big McEwen connection from this show, eh?
Yes.
I feel like
yeah.
It's a huge thing.
Yeah, you guys got to start pulling your weight.
We're a good group of people.
We have to go to McEwen now, I guess.
Everyone from McEwen, well, most people from McEwen are cool. There's a select few.
Yeah. Savic.
We won't mention
Yeah, that's
okay. We know, you guys know who I'm talking about, though.
I just said his name out loud.
Yeah. All right, so, Rob, do you want to tell us just a bit about the band? Like, what's the vibe? I mean, we just heard a tune, but if you could give us, like, the rundown.
I don't know. Well, actually, when we first got together to jam stuff, it was all just Matt's, like, a bunch of Matt's compositions. And I think we were kind of going for, like, a Nels Klein Singers kind of thing.
Okay.
We were, like, trying to be, like, pretty open and, like... it was, like, a lot more laid back and stuff. And then I started writing some tunes, and then they slowly got more and more difficult. Matt always says that he thinks that we were trying to have a competition to see who could write something that no one else in the band could play. But I never was doing that. I was just writing stuff, and then I guess he saw it as a competition because he's kind of, you know, egotistical like that. Okay. He's kind of an asshole. So, no, he's not.
We can edit that out.
we'll leave that in. It'll be
no,
good.
You gotta leave it in. You gotta. and so, yeah. And then eventually it just got more and more intense. And then we turned into more of a math rock band, I guess.
It's a pretty, pretty like, 180 transition there from, like, open.
I don't know. It depends. Like, some of the Nels Klein recordings are, like, really, really, they're really rocking out, right?
Okay, yeah.
So, I don't know.
Cool. So you guys recently released your first of two EPs.
Yeah.
So this one was called Once We Were Once Cro-Magnon.
Yeah.
And where did you guys do the release?
We did the release at the Central.
Cool.
Yeah.
How did that all go? How was the turnout and all that?
It was a good turnout. Yeah, we played with Fat as Fuck and Junior Bob.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been doing some gigs with Junior Bob too. That's pretty fun.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I got one coming up Saturday actually.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, man.
Man, like so
dude,
good.
Dude, fucking sick. Sorry, yeah. But the release at the Central, man.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And, yeah, we sold a ton of CDs and a bunch of T-shirts, and there's a really good feedback and everything, so.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And so, when is the next EP being released?
June 1st.
Okay.
Also at the Central.
It's at the Central.
Okay. Yeah.
And now, I gotta ask, why did you guys choose to do two EPs instead of, you know, one long album?
Okay, well, originally we were gonna do one long album, but it was kind of like... a lot of the people who listen to our music, we were starting to realize, are people not, like, jazz, quote-unquote, people or improvised music people. They're, like, punk rock, like, hardcore scene people. And I think a lot of those people are more, feel more comfortable with buying an EP, especially considering we hadn't released anything before that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sort of release one EP so that everyone can... have a sample of what the band sounds like or whatever, and then release like the other half of the record, I guess, is another EP. So you can buy them separately or buy them both together. It's just it's a super cool idea.
Yeah, that is an interesting idea. Yeah.
Man, I gotta ask about the title though, man. Like, where did the title come from? This thing's hilarious.
What this track?
Like, no one has ever seen
the Utah Raptor.
The what?
The Utah Raptor.
The Utah Raptor. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. It's like the real Velociraptor.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Like Velociraptor in Jurassic Park isn't.
It's like full of shit?
Yeah. Well, the real Velociraptor is like really tiny.
Yeah.
Oh.
So our Utah Raptor is like huge, and it's like the real deal.
So no one's ever seen one in
Well, no. Yeah. Of course not.
No.
Well, I mean, I'm sure some would have seen it, but they haven't lived to tell about it.
Exactly. No. Exactly. Yeah. Pretty man. Of course not. My other question is about the artwork. It's like, it's man, it's like fucking sick.
This right? one, this one here, or this one, or
both? Are they both?
Yeah. This one, the album artwork was done by Scott, who's the guy who, I guess he like runs the label that we're releasing it on, which is Fashion Machine. Scott Sokolowski. Sokolowski. I think it maybe Sokolowski. Just call him Roboto, though. And he's a really awesome guy. He's a great designer, and he is really pumped on our stuff and really supportive of the group and everything. And he did that for us, like, did the whole layout and everything. And, yeah, we're printing it all, like, through him and, like, his little business, I guess.
Nice, man. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Yeah.
So are there any
Go for it.
Are there any subsequent like EP release shows or any kind of tour planned or anything like that, or is it just going to be released? And
yeah, we don't have a tour planned yet, but we want to get one planned. Yeah. But I don't know when that's going to happen, cuz Matt's pretty busy and a bunch of stuff. Ian's pretty busy and I'm pretty busy now and then, but not as busy as them, I don't
think. it's tough to This seems to be like a big thing we talk about always. It's just like, it's tough to organize musicians.
Yeah.
Everyone's always so like so busy doing so many different things.
It's true. But it's sort of fortunate in this group because it's not really like any one person's band. Like,
nice.
You know, the songs were originally written by one of us and we would bring them in, and then everybody sort of just takes them and like does their own, like adds whatever stylistic elements they want to. Mm-hmm. Like the tune itself that would apply to their own personal voice or whatever, you know.
It's a cool way to run a band, like so many bands nowadays are just like one person is the leader and brings in their charts and everyone sort of just plays the ink. But
certainly in like the jazz world scene.
Well, this is what Dan Fortan talked about a couple weeks ago, right? He was like, he was really saying that like it's nice to see what you guys are doing, like the band concept, more of like the one person taking charge.
Yeah,
it just like leads to better music.
Yeah,
I think, you know.
Well, yeah, Myriad definitely has that vibe too, I find.
Mm-hmm. Right. So. Yeah, man. Okay, so you mentioned before that like you were selling merch at your shows, right?
Yeah.
Like it was shirts.
Yeah, we have shirts and CDs.
Shirts and CDs. Okay.
And we're gonna get pins, but we might just give away the pins.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is it? For the shirts, was that like a big decision, or was it just like, hey, let's just like buy prints for shirts and just sell them?
Yeah, it wasn't a big decision. We were just sort of like, we should get shirts. Yeah, wouldn't that be awesome? and we have this friend Mark O'Brien who's really good friends with Matt Fong. Well, he's good friends with all of us, but he knows Matt the best out of all of us. And he came to one of our shows and he came up to us afterwards. And he's a really good artist, and he says, man, guys, I gotta do your merch art. I gotta do it for you. So just like, you know, get together with me sometime and we'll talk about it. And so he designed I don't know if you guys have a picture of it.
The big squid.
We'll put up a link to this page anyway where you can get the EP. So
he designed that, and that's what's on the front of the shirt. And it's like the huge tentacles going in. It's really, really awesome shirt. And I can say that because I didn't make it.
I guess that kind of leads to my question, like, why all the like the science fiction references?
Because I'm a huge nerd.
Okay, that's fair.
At least you're like a multifaceted nerd, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you have all these different, like, you know, velociraptors. Or, sorry.
And not one of those fake nerds.
Exactly,
like the fake hipster nerds.
Yeah.
No. I'm not a nerd because it's cool, man. In fact, I'm so nerdy that it's really not cool.
It's like, I don't know, that's just one thing that just gets to me. Like, when people are like, oh, I'm such a nerd.
Yeah,
like, because totally. they've watched Star Wars a few times.
Yeah. Whereas I'm up until 5 in the morning watching GSL Code.
Yeah. it's just...
I know what that is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Rob and I are big StarCraft dudes.
Oh, yeah. That's what you were talking about in the hallway walking over here.
No, we were talking about a different video.
So funny.
Man. And this is probably why we're both single as well.
Yeah. Whatever. Forever alone.
Yeah.
You can't stay up till 5 in the morning watching your girlfriend, so.
No.
Well. Okay. This could go in so many bad places. Okay, so Rob, are you do you want to talk about any other projects you're involved in at the moment?
I'm not. Well, I'm involved in a few things. I don't know. It's sort of. It's all more jobby type material.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Make that money.
Yeah. Gotta.
It's important.
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah. To live. Yeah. In capitalist society.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
I thought there were societies that need money to live. Just capitalism.
Well, I what is it? I've been watching Game of Thrones recently, and there's that the horsemen dudes. They don't have money. That's sick. Yeah, yeah, good for them.
Good for them.
They don't have any jobbing gigs.
No, they just pillage.
Yeah, they just fuck people up instead.
That'd be something a job I'd be interested in getting into.
Pillaging?
Pillaging?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Genocide.
Let's do
Anarchy.
It.
Anarchy!
Jesus. So, yeah.
Fuck, Rob. Yeah, fuck, Rob's here.
No, keep going.
Isn't it great to have a guest in studio?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's pretty funny.
In studio also, sorry. I'd actually like to know, just I know you mentioned Nels Klein earlier, but just some other kind of artists that this music might have derived from, because to me it sounds like, I don't know. It's really like, to me it sounds really hardcore influenced. Like,
oh yeah, totally.
But I don't know what, like, where you guys are necessarily coming from with that, so I'm interested to hear.
I think definitely Refused. Mm-hmm. That's like Matt and I both totally love that band. Ian loves them too. Ian's really into Meshuggah, mm-hmm. So we have, you know, some of those like very technical like bass drum things that he does. I don't want to say anything specifically. A lot of my friends have said we sound like Fall of Troy, mm-hmm. but I don't, like, I mean, I Fall of Troy without vocals, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
I can hear that.
Yeah.
That kind of, that, I think that definitely puts a kind of a, like,
yeah,
points a little bit. Meshuggah especially. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Fall of Troy thing mostly comes from probably the guitar tone, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like, we did it all live off the floor too, so it was like,
oh, wow.
So. Yeah. So there's like a lot of sloppy elements, because we kind of wanted that. We wanted it to sound like it was kind of sloppy.
Sort of like that garage recording sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Like, if you listen to the, like, really carefully to the recording, there's mistakes here and there. There's like, somebody misses a note or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, we just went with it.
But what's a mistake, really?
It's,
yeah, totally.
It's really funny, because when we were listening earlier, I had mentioned, like, this is pretty clean sounding. Like, it sounds like pretty polished.
Oh, yeah.
So if that was live off the floor, like...
Yeah, well, we rehearsed a lot.
Of course.
But. I guess my question now is, like, where do you get a band like this to play? Because it seems like it's too hardcore to get played at, like, in, like, a jazz venue.
Yeah.
But it might also just be, like, too crazy for like, a punk dive.
No. I mean, we played at the Transact and somewhere there, and that was fine. Like, wow. People were into it there. And then we played at, like... what is it? The 460, and I mean, I'm trying to think of some of the other places. I haven't played Soypong yet, but we played a bunch of like punk venues too, and people really like it there. It's just like, it's kind of funny, because we also did an interview with a guy who does a like a video blog, I guess, for
a vlog.
I guess so. Yeah,
V-log
For the hardcore scene, like heavy music in Toronto.
Okay.
And he interviewed us, and he, at one point, we were like, we used to be way jazzier, and he's like, you guys were more jazzy than this?
Oh, really?
And we were like, yeah? Like, is this jazzy at all? Like, I don't get it.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's just like, it's kind of in a weird place, I think, for people that aren't used to...
Yeah.
To whatever. Sort of this area, this, like, sort of Prague area.
But a good place, though.
Yeah, totally.
It's really good music, okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, so. Safi's giving Dan the look again.
I've only got the look once today. That's a record.
It's usually like a Dan, shut the fuck up, that kind of look. You know, like that kind of thing.
It's like,
yeah.
This is the thing that happens.
I know.
Quite often.
This is what we do.
Yeah.
This is how we do.
Oh my god. Okay, so I think we got everything we need to know. This EP, the first EP, We Were Once Cro-Magnon, is currently for sale.
Yep.
On your guys' Bandcamp.
Yeah. Or you can come to a show too.
Okay, yeah.
Buy in there.
Nice.
But the Bandcamp is blastronautband.bandcamp.com.
Okay. And the second EP, We Are Now Post-Human.
Yeah.
Will be coming out.
You said June 1st?
June 1st.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Are you playing soon?
No, Matt's on tour all of April.
Okay.
Or all of most of May. Okay.
But I guess around June, there'll be something for
Yeah. We're playing a few times in June.
Yeah. Nice, man.
July.
So make sure you guys fucking come check this band out. They're dope.
We'll be there.
We will be there.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
So, Rob, thanks for coming on the show. Yeah, really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so once again, big thank you to John Maharaj and to Rob Grieve of Blasternut. Just a reminder, that if you want to check out Rob's music, it's at blasternutband.bandcamp.com. They just released their first EP.
So that's very nice. If you want to check out John, just go to any club on any given night and run into
you'll
him
find
eventually.
Him. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure he went to the Junos with Alice and Al. That was the group. So I think they're on iTunes. Mm-hmm. So if you just look up Alice and Al, A-U is the last name.
That's how you spell it?
Yeah.
I'm wondering this whole entire time. How the fuck do you spell Al?
Yeah. O-W.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's not funny. Sorry, we can't edit that. Not funny and, yeah. Okay, guys. So, you guys saw the thing on, was it Jimmy Kimmel?
Yes.
I think, where they, was it Oshaga that they went to? Is that the festival?
Some fucking druggist music festival.
Like Coachella or something in the States.
Oh, Coachella. I think it was Coachella. Anyway, they, like, they put on this segment that was, like, they supposedly told these, like, all these young people at the festival, like, have you heard of so-and-so band? And it was, like, definitely not a real band. And then, like, the people they were interviewing would always be like, oh, yeah, I love those guys. They're great.
That's so good.
But, I don't know. It just kind of, like, inspired me to just, like, an idea. And this is something I want to try out, is that I've written down a bunch of real bands and a bunch of fake bands. And I'm going to say them, and you guys are going to have to guess if they're real or fake. All right? You ready?
Absolutely.
You ready? Okay. We should keep, like, a running tally or something like that. I don't know.
We should,
I shall keep it in my mind.
Okay. No, sounds we're good. Mine. Okay, okay. Sounds here we go. Here we go. let's start out. Destiny Potato.
That's a fake band.
That's a real band.
It's a real band.
Oh, my God.
It's a real band.
Destiny Potato.
Man, all the real ones I got from, like, cracked.com. Like, yeah. That's it. Because, of course, they have a list about this.
I'm never going to win this game.
Top 50 real band names that you swear are fake.com. Okay.
Wait, is that a band name?
No. It should be. The Mr. T Experience.
That's a real band for sure.
I'm going to go with real band.
It's a real band.
That's sick.
How are you...
do we each get a tally for that? Do we each get a point?
Yeah, you do, for sure.
Okay,
yeah.
So now it's
so Savix one up. Savix one up.
It's 2-1, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we just do, yeah.
Yeah. Parallel Diversity.
That's a fake band.
It is a fake band.
It is a fake band. Yeah, you got
still
it.
Still one up.
Toad the Wet Sprocket.
That's a real fucking band.
That is a fake band.
It's a real band.
Damn.
Boom,
we're all tied up. We're tied up. Okay. The.
That's a real band. That's got to be a real band.
That is not a real band.
It's a real band.
Because I guess I have more faith in, like, my fellow human beings than Dan.
Oh, man. Okay. This one's pretty easy. Let's save that one. Let's save that one. Polygrowth.
That's a real band.
It's a fake band.
Yes, dude. I'm up by two.
Fuck.
Okay. This one, Anal Cunt.
That's a real band. I've listened to them before.
Of course you fucking listened to them.
They're a metal band. They're sick.
Doesn't count.
I guess I should have figured they're a metal band. They're not like a smooth jazz ensemble.
That does count. Fuck you.
Well, but I didn't say anything. Because you answered the real band and you said you heard them before. So I couldn't...
Yeah, but I could just be trying to mind game you.
Okay.
All right, let's do... Let's do one more because my iPod just died with the list of bands.
Okay.
All right. Nagging Groin Thing.
Oh my God, this is fuck. Okay, let's.
You know, you guys have to think about it. Yeah.
Let's call this. We're at a tie right now. Whoever gets this wins.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
If we both get it, we both win. Yeah,
can you say it again?
Nagging Groin Thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a band.
It's a band.
It's not a band.
Oh man.
You both lose. All right. Well, that was Real Band, Fake Band. Thanks for joining us.
We should get a Real Band, Fake Band theme song.
We should. We really should. We'll write like an 8-bit.
Real Band, Fake Band in the house.
There it is. There it is. That's it. I'm just going to take that and I'm going to use it.
Fun.
We already have it.
In the house.
All right.
So
Dan,
just going down
Dan,
the fucking
okay.
tube.
So Dan, you checked out Rye a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah. April.
I'm checking our Rye since 13th. I was like 13.
Live?
Incidentally.
Well, I'm kind of alive now. It's okay. We can edit that out.
Okay.
Rye was a pretty interesting show. They're a brand new band from LA. They kind of just came out of the woodwork. I had never heard of them. A lot of people. Well, I guess they weren't a real thing until less than a year ago.
Did they put out their first?
They put out their first record like not long ago. They had a few singles that kind of went relatively viral over the span of the last 6 months or so, and they put out this record that's really, really good. And they're in Toronto, April 13th, and the house was packed. It was at the Great Hall, and they packed the place. And it was such a weird show. Like, we got in there. And the vibe was like, it's pretty tangible. Everyone was really excited. And it wasn't a huge room, but it was a good sized room. They had like candles on the stage. The ambiance was set up. It took a while to come on stage. And when they came out, it was just like everyone was really excited. And they played their music really, really, really well.
Nice.
To the point where it was like, it was just better than the record. Because, shit. I mean, you get bands that just like can't live up to their record live. And you get bands that live up to it too much in the sense that, like, when I saw Death Cab for Cutie 5 or 6 years ago, I was like, I could have just listened to the record at home and been more entertained because they're really boring live, at least the show that I saw. But this was like they pulled off the record and more, in the sense like you could tell they were all like ex-music students and music nerds, because every tune kind of turned into like a jam, and they turned every tune into like a, they added solo sections to the tunes, and they would all take these really, really, really good solos.
Nice.
Every band member, the cellist doubled on trombone, and she was both a badass cellist and trombone player, and they were all blowing.
I feel like everyone that plays cello is just smoking hot.
She was good looking, but yeah. So that was an interesting thing, because like I mean you could kind of like tell. It was interesting for me sitting there as a music student, being like, okay, like every solo they take, you can tell like they've played on hundreds of final recitals and recording projects or the like, or whatever, you know, you could hear it just like, yeah, okay, they played standards gigs a billion times, and like, you know, at one point they have this relatively short record, 30 to 45 minutes in that range, and that's all the tunes they have, right? So when they finished the set, their last tune was coming up, and Milos, who's the, I think it's the head of the band, the
Milos,
he was like, listen man, like we would love to do an encore, but like we don't have any more tunes. Like, you guys know the record. Like, that's shit. Everything. So wow. We're not going to do this encore thing. We're going to play this tune. That's it. And then, like, I mean, I was so inclined. I yelled out, like, just play some tunes. Like, we'll listen. Like, it was that obvious. Like, they would know the tunes. Like, they were such music nerds. And it was just funny to see, because, like, you would think that a band that was doing that was taking these short kind of, like, electro pop tunes and turning them into jam tunes with solo sections, that it would be cheesy or tacky,
right.
But it really wasn't. It was really tasteful. Like, it was well done.
What was that? What was the crowd like? Because you're saying like they're all like kind of music, like student types themselves.
It was kind of a hip crowd, young okay. hipster crowd. Okay. People in the back wouldn't shut the fuck up, which was really annoying. Correct. Fucking talking over this really like slow, pensive music, which is kind of annoying. But yeah, pretty hipster type crowd, you know.
Good thing. The thing that people always talk about is like they get bugged by, the people in general get bugged by like people talking when there's music going on.
I really do. Yeah.
I don't really care.
Well, it depends.
I think if you're like at a concert,
a concert setting, yeah,
you like fucking paid for tickets. Yeah, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. And especially like Rai, you've heard that record.
Yeah.
Like, it is a soft record, and he's got this beautiful like really, like you want to hear that stuff, man. Mm-hmm. Like
totally.
If you've got people talking, like, you can hear them over the voice. It's that soft.
Dude, he's got a beautiful really what? I never finished that, and I want to know what it is.
He's just got a really, like, I don't know. He's got a really great voice.
Okay.
But it's not, he doesn't really, like, project super loud. He's not belting. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not really a head voice, but it's kind of a head voice. I don't know.
So it's boring is what you're saying.
No,
I think that's what he's saying. That's what I'm getting out of
this. Rye sucks. That's what we're taking from this.
Yeah. I'm going to take out everything you just said and just leave that one part in. Like, hey, Dan, how was the show? Rye sucks.
The power of editing.
Yeah, right? I have all the power.
Yeah. So that's that. Do you guys have anything to plug? Are you playing anywhere?
I'm doing, actually, I'm doing a twice monthly gig at Placebo Space this summer.
With who?
Chelsea McBride. And others that we know. I think Rob Chapman and Brad Cheeseman.
What sort of stuff?
We're just doing like standards stuff at Placebo.
You're playing standards with someone else?
Sorry, man.
What the fuck?
I don't love you anymore.
We're both sad about this, man. No, we're joking.
No one cares about you.
This is about me and Savvy. It's gonna be cool. Also, fuck, I was a couple days ago. I was a guest on a podcast, on a baseball podcast, I just talked about like the team overall in general, and I feel like I should just like plug his show here and let you know if you want to have a listen. It's called Blue Jays From Away, the podcast, and I'm pretty sure the website is just bluejaysfromaway.com. And if I'm wrong, I'll put a link to it somewhere.
Did you Skype into this podcast?
I did Skype in, yeah, and he like recorded the Skype call.
Oh, cool.
And he edited out all the bullshit I was talking about. It's really difficult to be the interviewee.
Yeah.
Like, we're just here sitting around, like, asking questions that we can, like, think of in, like, seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, to talk about yourself for, like, a long time without interruption.
I love talking about myself.
Yeah.
I love it.
You do. I know.
Silence.
Just silence, yeah. Yeah, but it's, it was very interesting to be on the other side of things, too.
Yeah.
Because it, like, made me realize that we should ask better questions.
I think we're doing okay.
Yeah.
We're doing all right.
Unfortunately, we didn't put that into effect for this interview.
But
maybe next time.
Yeah. The interviews were great today, though. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. It's nice to see John and Rob talk.
Yeah, totally.
Good stuff. So.
Good stuff. Good
yeah,
stuff
it was
for
good.
Sure.
Yeah.
And the music's fucking kick-ass, too.
Yeah.
All of it. It's awesome.
Totally.
What do you got going on, Savvy? Anything?
Dude, fucking nothing, man.
Sick.
School's done.
School's done.
Summer, go camping every day.
Camping and podcasting.
Fucking make it. Put a tent on an air mattress and float it out into the lake.
That's
sounds
genius.
Like a great idea, yeah.
Make your own boat. It'll be sick.
Boat.
But no, I got nothing going on. I got
sick.
thanks for tuning in.
This is what we do. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's wrap her up. So again, big thank you to John Maharaj, Rob Grieve. We're working on getting some pretty cool guests in as well next week, so should be a really nice show next week. As it always is.
As always.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Sounds good to me.